Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency in order. It is Tuesday, June 4th, and today we have an informational meeting, which will be a presentation from Gary Blackmer, who is the Director of the Audits Division in the Secretary of State's office. The informational meeting will be about boards and commissions and the audit that was conducted last year. And we're following up with a conversation on this topic, still trying to peel back the layers of issues surrounding boards and commissions. And so with that, Bob, do you have any introductory comments to make?
No, Mr. Chair, just looking forward to Mr. Blackmer's presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Blackmer, please. Appreciate you making yourself available today, and thank Secretary of State Kate Brown for her indulgence of this committee again. You could introduce yourself for the record and give us a little bit of background on this audit.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Blackmer. I'm the Secretary of State Audits Division Director. I'm also a walking pollen gauge, and it's on a high today.
I'm with you.
I'm probably going to cough a few times during my testimony, but I will hopefully get through it without too much of that.
Shall we send Bob down with some water now?
I have water right here, so
good.
I was ready for me. So
good.
I guess one of the questions we always try to answer is, why did we do this audit? And we're always looking at how we can apply our audit resources in the best way possible to make sure that we're identifying key issues and problems in the state. And we had seen a number of boards and commissions around the state that had issues and concerns that were raised around compliance with rules, payroll practices, and so forth. We're also seeing audits from other states that raised issues around boards and commissions. And so what we saw was that there was some inherent risks in boards and commissions. And so I asked the auditors to step back and ask some broader questions about, you know, why is this happening? So some of the audits we looked at, just to get a sense, we looked at Commission for the Blind, which we had done a number of audits on and follow-up reports, the State Marine Board, Landscape Architecture Board, the Tourism Commission over the last 8 to 10 years that have all had kind of problems that rose to the point where we had to do formal audits. So what we did was we looked at those other reports out there, looked at what kind of guidance and best practices were out there to get a better understanding. But we also kind of looked at the history of the boards. Before we begin, though, let me kind of break it down. When we looked at the boards, we looked at the types of boards that the state of Oregon has. And we have the largest number advisory. So they are groups of stakeholders who are kind of talking about issues and policies, similar to the policy groups as well. So they don't necessarily have staff. They're advising agencies or programs on particular issues. We have governing boards. There are about 50 of them, and they're actually governing staff, personnel, sometimes even agencies around what they should be doing to serve Oregonians. Licensing boards are exactly what they sound like. They're licensing professionals, certifying them, handling complaints from clients, ensuring that the best are getting in and that they continue to provide good service to Oregonians. And then the last one is the judgment boards, and those are kind of the quasi-judicial hearing type boards that are reviewing and hearing appeals on things. So there's a variety of boards to begin with, and they aren't all the same in that some of them have more risks than others. They're generally established through enabling legislation, again, trying to bring subject matter experts together and diverse stakeholder views for those policy type issues, and even in terms of the certification process for licensing and other things. the process is generally the governor appoints more than two-thirds of those board members, and many of them also require Senate confirmation. And some of them are appointed by the Speaker of the House or the Senate President or by government executives. As I said, some boards oversee agencies like the Transportation Commission, Parks and Recreation Commission. Others have no staff at all, and they depend upon the agency to provide administrative support and duties that, you know, minute-taking, scheduling meetings, and so forth. Some of those boards that are overseeing agencies have considerable power distributing money for highway projects, deciding how state money will be invested, or overseeing the state pension system and Oregon Lottery. So there are just a whole variety when you start looking at the boards themselves. And this has been a long-standing issue. Our report, and going into the history, we ran into a couple of quotes from past governors we thought were quite good. This was one from Governor William Lord in 1897.
Wow.
He said, "A board is a mischievous administrative instrumentality because its effect is to divide responsibility, destroy the symmetry of our governmental system, trench on the prerogatives of the executive, and injuriously affect the management of the institutions. To avoid further enumeration in detail, I earnestly recommend that you abolish all boards, commissions, and offices that do not serve a useful public purpose, and thus cut off the unnecessary expense of their longer continuance." And so this was one of the earliest quotes, but we got quotes from governors throughout, but unfortunately, it didn't have much effect. In fact, yeah. Governor Lord was talking about 16 boards and commissions in his era, so we have over 250 right now. And that's not unusual. We saw other states that have a large number of boards and commissions, and they've struggled to try to figure out how they could contain and make them efficient and ensure that there was good oversight happening of the agencies they were overseeing, as well as oversight on the boards that they were delivering what was intended for the residents of their state. So this is one of the challenges that I think Oregon, as well as other states, face.
Just a quick question. How do you define newly formed?
Those were just since the last time period. So these are about 25-year periods. So okay. We kind of blocked it off so that newly formed were those that occurred since that time period.
Thank you. Well, we've stopped you in your coughing and getting a drink of water. It's often been asked of me, do we actually have a list that names all the boards and commissions?
Chair Holvey, that's a very good question. That's what we started with, and we didn't. So we spent a considerable amount of time cataloging all those boards and commissions. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's what most of our report is. We have about 65 pages of our report that lists all those boards and commissions we could find, their mission, the type of board, who appoints them, the year they were established, the enabling statutes or legislation, and if they have a website or not, and what it is. So that was one of the biggest tasks we had. And in fact, we want to go one step further, and we wanted to send a survey out to all the chairs of all the boards and commissions to ask them to fill out. And from our standpoint, we wanted to ask those questions that all good boards and commissions should be doing, like, do you do an annual performance evaluation of your staff? Do you double-check the procurement and personnel approvals that are going on? Are you monitoring expenditures? Are you, you know, those good management oversight kinds of responsibilities? Unfortunately, we couldn't find enough valid addresses and names of the committee chairs to send something like that out. So we ended up doing a statistical sample of them because it was just, you know, they were not being tracked very well. And we might have old board members or chairs, but not the current ones. And sometimes we found boards and commissions that the government, there was one the governor's office didn't realize existed. And they had their appointees had all lapsed and no one had reappointed board members. So those are the kinds of things that we encountered as we were going through the audit. And so it was, you know, from our standpoint, one of our key recommendations was you know, get a complete inventory of them and keep that contact information up to date. And as soon as, even before the audit was done, the governor's office had started adding names that they were finding of other boards, because sometimes an agency would create a board, appoint the members, and those too are important ones to track and monitor. So there were some, we were starting from the statutes, but there are some within agencies as well, and I think they were up to over 275 or so by the time they were done going through and adding to our list.
And some of them are called committees as well. I would have...
That's correct, Chair Hovey.
Okay. I know that because I'm on one that's a committee.
And this information was developed last year?
Yes, we issued the audit in June of 2012. And I'll talk, Chair Hovey, Representative Lively, we are now just initiating an audit of the health licensing boards and commissions to kind of probe a little deeper and get a better sense of one area where, from our perspective, we're looking at it on a performance basis, as well as just on the administrative side. So our concern is those are key services to Oregonians, and there are risks involved in the services as well as risks in the administration of certification and complaint handling. So we want to be able to look at those practices as well.
Yeah. And one more, you're never going to get through this, but one more question okay. before you go on. So is there a look at trying to develop categories of boards and commissions that have similar, perhaps, industries or scopes, or, you know, some sort of maybe not overlap, but certain things that are similar to... so that they could be grouped in different areas? Has that been something that's been thought about or done? Or
Chair Holby, yes, in fact, there are a number of boards and commissions that some advise other boards and commissions. Mm. So you start wondering why you have an advisory board advising an advisory board. That's part of what we saw. But there are actually places where there is some consolidation. Speaking of grasses, I think it's a grass. We've got the medium fescue and the
tall
short fescue that are different committees, but administratively they're managed by one staff. So it's a way that there is some of that where there's overlap, although I would imagine there's a big debate between which one's better. And regardless, they are similar enough that they can consolidate some of their administrative duties and have one or more staff providing support for them. So that does go on, and other states have done similar exercises to look for those overlapping or duplicative boards and commissions and consolidated them. When we started looking at costs, it was pretty hard to get a handle on it because so many of them, when they were created, for example, in 2011, there was an indication that they had a fiscal impact, but in most cases, it was indicated that the agency would absorb the cost. So it wasn't actually quantified, and it's hard to figure out how much staff time is taken to organizing meetings, taking minutes, kind of... doing the administrative reimbursements for mileage or whatever might be happening in that for that board or commission. So those are going on at a certain level as well that we can't necessarily quantify, but they're out there. And for smaller agencies, it can add up. For, you know, the Oregon Transportation Commission, that's, you know, they're the guiding board or commission for that whole agency. I would imagine from their standpoint it's, you know, a considerable amount of work, but also something that's critical to their, you know, setting direction and policy. So in some cases it's something that the agency see as a critically important thing to do, and others they try to make it work with the staff they have. As I said, we were called in to do audits in a number of boards and commissions. We saw similar patterns in other states and even localities where they depend upon boards and commissions. What we saw was that there were patterns around the small staff itself creates risks that they don't segregate their duties, as we say, in auditing, meaning that the same person may be, you know, doing their own payroll, signing their payroll, or buying something, signing that it was received. And so there's a risk there that improper actions can happen. And we've had a number of cases where, you know, public dollars have been misdirected improperly by staff that don't have sufficient segregation of duties. One of the other issues is the board members may not have a clear understanding what their roles or responsibilities are. You know, on a policy level, I think they have a sense of what that entity and its mission is and how they can contribute to it. But if they're actually administering or overseeing an agency, the kinds of questions about ensuring that the performance is done is conducted well, that the services are prompt and high quality and efficient, those are things that part-time volunteers have a really hard time getting into depth and being able to provide assurance that it's happening. And I think one of the risks is that they're listening a lot to the executive director, who is conveying information about what happened in the last month or in the last quarter. So there's a tendency to accept what's provided. Willamette Education Service District was an example. This is actually, you know, a partially elected, partially appointed board that essentially accepted what the superintendent was saying without knowing what was happening down deep within the organization. And those are the kinds of issues that, you know, if you're a volunteer, you're only there for a few hours a month, it's hard to really understand what's happening in that organization. And that's where, you know, a board may not be as good at providing that executive oversight as, you know, the managerial type responsibilities that would be expected. That it tends to, it models on nonprofits where it's more of a standalone entity as opposed to something that is part of government. And I think that's one of the other things that it makes increases the risk that many of these boards and commissions are intended to provide kind of certifications for professionals, and there's a certain imprimatur of having a state board or commission doing that, but that also creates a liability for the state if it's not done well. So there, you know, in order for the state to be sponsoring this official certification, it needs to have some expectation that it's done properly, for the profession's sake, it's the complaints are being, you know, thoroughly, fairly, objectively judged. And so to that extent, there's a risk around to the state of having a board or commission having these kinds of powers and duties.
Excuse me. It would just seem to me then how they get established, I mean, has a big bearing on that, or who establishes, because as we talk about that range of things, obviously not every board and commission is created equal, but at some point, however they were, there must be expectations when they're established of what are those functions the board or commission is supposed to do. But is that something that, I mean, do each one have one? I mean, I don't even know where this stuff starts from.
So. Chair Hovey, Representative Livey, I think they do all have missions and statutory authority and responsibilities. Whether they're actually turning that into day-to-day activities is the real question.
Sure.
So, to the degree that the way I think about it is employees in the governor's branch of the state know that ultimately the buck stops at the governor's desk. Mm-hmm. Employees of a board or commission, it stops at the board. For example, for the Commission for the Blind, we did a number of audits, and we were writing our recommendations to the kind of the commission, but it was actually the director who was responding. So in our last follow-up, we said, we want a response from the commission, not from the director. And that changed the dynamic dramatically, because suddenly it wasn't the director talking to the commission about our audit. It was, we had board members sitting down with us and going through it, and they made a major commitment for change there. Mm. So
okay.
To the degree that was kind of, I would call it a learning moment for us, that we need to understand that the director is not necessarily the board, and we need to think about those as two distinct entities, and that ultimately, you know, we need to make sure that we're communicating to the board what we're seeing and hearing.
Thank you.
One of the challenges, I mentioned that we had an incomplete list of all the boards that we started from. We had a hard time getting member contact information. Chair information was missing or outdated. We didn't necessarily know when meetings were occurring. The information was out of date on websites if we could find them. Performance data was pretty spotty in terms of some had it, some didn't. Similarly with financial information, budgetary information, excuse me, and some of the websites were either non-existent or extremely difficult to find. So from the standpoint of the public's business, if you were a professional, you might be able to know exactly where that website was, but if you were a client or a patron of one of those professionals, you might not necessarily know where to go to complain. Or if you wanted to know about a policy hearing coming up, you might not be able to know where to find that meeting and when it was going to occur. So, you know, there needs to be, you know, an assurance, I think, from a transparency standpoint, that the public knows what these boards and commissions are doing on their behalf. And that kind of leads into the whole notion of accountability around boards. Well, when we started looking at the issues that had come up and questions and concerns, we found that there was some uncertainty about whether personnel rules applied to board members. They're volunteers. Are they expected to abide by, you know, the personnel practices to make sure that they're doing things properly and appropriately? You know, what we also heard were anecdotes about board members who said, well, I've been appointed, and that's where the governor's responsibility ends. I will carry out my duties for the rest of my term, and that's the understanding. The governor didn't always believe that either, and so to the degree that that's an area of uncertainty around boards and commissions and the volunteers. I mean, it's not to say that this is a common practice, but it has come up as issues that haven't been resolved around ensuring that they're, you know, that they're showing up for meetings, that they're working in a good negotiated way with the other board members to make sure that all viewpoints are heard and so forth. And that last piece in terms of removing board members, it's not always clear who has that authority or in what cases that should happen. So, I mean, there needs to be some assurance that board members are not improperly removed. If their viewpoint isn't welcome, that doesn't necessarily mean the basis for removing them. But if there are other problem matters that come up, there needs to be some guidance in statute that says, you know, these are the kinds of circumstances that would be appropriate.
Interesting you should make that comment, because I don't know that it's been signed by the governor yet, but we did pass a bill that essentially codifies that the appointing authority can remove the board member. It moved out of the House Rules Committee. I don't remember the bill number, but
that's good news, Chair Holby. Thank you.
Somebody was paying attention anyway to the audit.
Yes. We looked at other states, and there were not a lot of grand solutions out there. And just from a cautionary standpoint, none of them felt like they'd figured out how to manage the proliferation of boards, because they had a large number also. Colorado had something called sunrise requirements, that when boards and commissions were created, there were a certain series of questions that needed to be answered, that, you know, is this a significant health, safety, or welfare need? Can a board meet that need, or can an agency? Is there no other cost-effective solution? So they had a series of questions that they asked before it could even be created, which helped, I think, at least from their standpoint, slow down the growth a little bit. Sunset reviews. Washington State has 10 questions, kind of like those three, but others, such as, has the mission of the board of the Board of Commission been completed or ceased to be critical to effective state government? Will termination of the Board of Commission have a significant adverse impact on state revenue because of the loss of federal funds? Could the work of the Board of Commission be done by an ad hoc committee? That's three of their 10. And so they have ways to kind of judge that. I should add that Oregon had a sunset commission from 1977 to 1993, and during its 16 years, it managed to eliminate four boards and commissions, and ultimately it was eliminated, so it was the fifth. So,
oh my God, what was it called?
A long time to eliminate.
That was from 77 to 93. So,
what is it called?
It's a struggle.
The Sunset Commission.
The Sunset Commission, yes.
I would imagine there's a lot of political interest in seeing these boards and commissions exist. So.
Well, if I I could tell you, there was an interesting story. We talked to one of the administrators in Governor Greg Wire's office. She was there a number of years ago working on boards and commissions, and she said the biggest challenge that she had was something called the Duck Hunting Stamp Committee. No, it was the Duck Art Stamp Committee. Mm-hmm. And what this was artists would paint ducks, and then they would have a judging, and the best painting was affixed to stamps that the duck hunters would use as permission. Well, Washington discontinued the stamps a number of years earlier, but the committee continued on because they liked the idea about judging duck art and having a winner and a runner-up and so forth. So, but it took two or three legislative sessions for them to finally get rid of this duck stamp art committee. And I think it points to the fact that there are strong advocates for every kind of issue that these committees represent. And they have, you know, they think they're contributing value and you know, culture and all sorts of things to Oregonians. And we auditors are not in a position to judge that. And I don't necessarily want to get into that. But to the degree that that's the kind of challenges I think any group faces in trying to eliminate boards and commissions is that there are strong advocates who want to preserve that group that has, you know, a mission that they think is important. In 1999, the legislature created the Health Licensing Office. This is one thing that Oregon did a number of years ago, merging 9 boards. In 2009, in contrast, 13 more boards were suggested for consolidation. However, that didn't occur. So, I mean, there are continual efforts. Yes?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, the committee can just ask questions without asking me for permission on this informational hearing. You feel like you all have the gavel.
Great, thank you. Can you tell me what those, or mention some of the 13 boards are?
I'm going to have to look that up. Let me get back to you on that. I'll send that list to you. I think it was a bill that came forward in 2009.
Yeah, and if you could refer it back to the committee administrator so we could all see that, that'd be helpful. We don't want Representative Kenny Geyer to be the only knowledgeable one.
Proprietary information.
An example of what California did, they eliminated a large number of boards and committees. And for example, one thing that they found was that there was a credit union advisory committee that was a standing committee, but it only needed to be brought together in specific circumstances. So what they recommended was that an ad hoc advisory committee be appointed by the Secretary of the Department of Commerce when the need arose, so they didn't have to have the standing committee. So you may have some of those kinds of things here in Oregon where you could look at it, say, is this something that we may need, but it's only intermittently, and we don't necessarily need to sustain a standing committee. So after
for your information, remember we did eliminate one commission this year, the Wage and Hour Commission.
Correct.
We eliminated it. It was formed in 1931, but they have not met since 2008. So I do believe that we...
Okay,
good. Not for the Senate, but we did lower your work by one.
That's commendable. I appreciate it.
They gave all their powers to Boley about 10 years ago. So
in 200 years, we'll be down to what, 50?
Yep. So in putting all this together, I mean, we felt like it was really a variety of issues around this, and it wasn't something that just the governor owned or the legislature or, in terms of the administrative functions, DAS. But we recommended that first they develop a comprehensive listing, look at implementing sunrise requirements to ensure that there is a public need, ensure all board members receive adequate training on administrative, legal, and operational requirements. There is a handbook that the governor's office distributes. There used to be training that was provided by DAS on payroll, financial practices, but that was discontinued with budget cuts. Ensure that statutes are clear as to the authority and expectations of each board and the appointed board's authority's powers to address performance issues. Require periodic fiscal and operational reports about each board's mission, objectives, resources, activities, and results. Implement a clearly defined, publicly available process for complaint handling about boards, and periodically evaluate boards to identify those that could be eliminated or combined with existing boards or agencies. We had another quote here from Governor Mark Hatfield in 1959, and he had a rather ambitious quote about all the different boards and commissions that he wanted to consolidate. I don't think it went too far, but we didn't want to. This would have taken several screens, so I figured I'd just squeeze it down. It's in the whole quotes in the audit report, and our audit report is on our website. I would welcome you to go look at it. It's rather large because of all the inventory at the back of the boards and commissions. It has more information on the strategies used by other states, and as I said, 60 plus pages of tables describing the boards and commissions. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this.
I'll start out with a question. I know that one of the things I've heard about is our complaints, I guess, from people about, their dealings with boards and commissions and enforcement authority that boards and commissions have. And it seems like some boards and commissions have a great deal of authority in enforcement of whatever industry they basically oversee, and some boards and commissions just have advisory capacity, like you had mentioned before. But you had mentioned early on about concerns of the risk that they pose to the state, especially when you start getting into taking legal action against Oregonians or businesses. I guess my question is, do enforcement authorities generally, when they're done by an agency, have less risk to the state because of the professionalism or the requirements that the agency puts on their employees versus a board or commission?
Chair Hovey, I guess I'm speculating a little bit in the sense that larger agencies would more likely have a breadth of experience in that area. I mean, and they would, they might have attorney general's advice, a variety of other issues in advance of making a decision. I think some boards and commissions may be better at that than others, or they may encounter situations that are unusual for them, and they may not respond to a organization with more history in it, in the sense that I think turnover can happen pretty quickly when there's only three employees, whereas turnover, in an agency with 20 or 30 or 40, the institutional memory is less likely to be lost. So I think there are risks like that where if they're taking an action, they may not have as broad awareness of what the consequences are as larger agencies. But again, that's a little bit of speculation, just thinking about organizationally how how they learn and how they respond to challenges.
In one of the, because I've spent some time on the Office of Administrative Hearings Oversight Committee, one of the issues that's always come up and been questions that some boards and commissions with their, you know, when they take a civil action or administrative law process, they have what's called final order authority, whereas in some don't. Is there, I mean, I've always wondered why some agencies can be overturned by an ALJ and some or boards and commissions, some can't. And some can be appealed and some can't. And it doesn't seem to have any consistency through that process. And I'm wondering if your audit looked into, you know, the issues like that.
Chair Hovey, that's an interesting question. I don't know either. It would really be, you know, the purpose and impact, and that was not something we looked at in our audit, I guess.
So it would probably just have generated from the legislation that created that particular board or commission and granting it.
I'm guessing.
And I'll just say that in the midwifery bill, the OLA used to have the final authority, but one of the big proposed changes is that the direct entry midwives would have that because the chiropractors have, you know, because certain, so they want to follow the precedent that other health licensing boards have, where the licensing boards have full authority over rulemaking and investigations. But under OLA, they would be outside because of the 11 boards that are under the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, OLA always has final authority. And so it's like you could look to two different places to establish precedent, and they're different precedents.
Right.
So it's what makes sense and who should have final authority. So we've had a big kind of tug of war about that.
Well, and it poses legal challenges for people that are involved in that scenario as well.
What's ALJ?
Administrative law judge that does the administrative law hearings. When there's a dispute with a particular board or agency.
Uh-huh.
And those are appealable to the Court of Appeals generally to get to a final answer, but there's some boards and commissions who overturn administrative law judges and have final authority and some don't. It just seems like a arbitrary setup to me. I don't know.
I have a question. Thanks for being here. So one of my areas of interest is in kind of technology and how did you, through your audit, did you take a look at how boards and commissions are using technology or if they have technology projects that they want to do, how they're going about kind of fulfilling or implementing those?
Chair Hovey, Representative Peterson, we saw that they were, some of them were taking advantage of the state's web content management system, which was good, and we thought that would be a relatively easily accessible notion. But many of them don't have the staff or the size or the need for massive technology. I think in some ways technology might work for the larger organizations that might have 20 or 30 or 40 staff. I mean, there's everything from transportation to OLCC to, you know, fine fescue or whatever, and everything in between. So some of them are, I think, using what the agencies have to help them, but others not necessarily, just because they're small, they're, you know, two or three staff, and that's kind of it. Word processing maybe, mm-hmm. and the internet maybe it.
Yeah, I have a bill this session that helped would create a team under DAS that would be able to be a reference or a resource for these smaller boards and commissions and even agencies mm-hmm. to help them with that. So I just was curious to see if you had, you know, kind of seen if there were any commissions that were struggling with that issue.
Yeah, and I think, you know, isn't it iLearn or that you can actually do online meetings?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a potential out there that could be used also for more outreach. But from our standpoint, just getting an inventory and getting them at least on the same page would be a good starting point. I think that would naturally be the next step beyond there in terms of transparency and communicating to others. So having it out there would be great.
speaking of transparency, I became aware of how many, I guess, innumerable boards and commissions there are out there just by looking at the transparency website, looking at the public meeting notices, and just today there are 5 unique boards or commissions meeting today, just public notices. There's 5 unique ones tomorrow, and I think about 8 or 10 or, I don't know, there's a whole bunch, and they ramp up to about 10 meetings that don't even duplicate during the rest of the week. Agriculture Board meets today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and I mean, there's just a whole bunch mm-hmm. of boards and commissions, and I am glad that you're trying to inventory, and I think that was really wise to do, and I think we should get a handle on how many agencies altogether that we have in state government, and then also we've got so many things going on, like all these economic development programs that we kind of set up here and there. We have, you know, a department for that, but there are some agencies that contain programs that are for the, you know, helping out with economic development. We don't know what we have. We just need to take an inventory, and I think this is a great first step, and I
So that does raise a question about your inventory. What kind of confidence do you have then that your inventory is counted 80% of the boards and commissions, 90%, or do you care to hazard a guess, or you don't know what you don't know?
Chair Hovey, I think we've probably hit 95% of what's in statute. That's my guess. That's just a rough guess. There's probably a few other ones out there that have a different name than commission, board, committee, task force, whatever, that we haven't found in our searches. But there's another group out there that aren't even in statute that we kind of stumble on, and I think the governor's office stumbles on, and they do it from an appointing standpoint, so because that's kind of the driver for them is to fill vacancies, so they have that, but there are other ones that are not appointed by them that they may not be aware of. So I think we're probably, I mean, 259 in this report is a big number. If we just tackled these, that would be good enough.
So did the governor's office have a list or an inventory of the boards and commissions that they appoint?
Chair Hovey, yes. I believe that they've got like 2,400 appointees that they are trying to manage on a day-to-day basis. And, I mean, ultimately, that's the accountability point for all these boards and commissions is within the governor's office, that appointing person. And so it's not a great accountability mechanism, and they're really just trying to keep up with finding the best people to fill those slots and making sure that they are kind of filtering and screening and selecting the right ones is a full-time job in and of itself, but then to ask them to ensure that they're carrying out their duties properly is kind of beyond their capability in terms of 1.5 or maybe 2 FTE, so that's kind of it.
Appears to me, since 1970, this has been our primary jobs creating measures that we've taken as many boards and commissions if we've created new members. That's pretty incredible. So a couple questions, though. So in your searching through, and we've got 259 or so, did you identify any that aren't around anymore that have indeed sunsetted or have gone into existence that were during this time frame for good reasons?
Chair Hovey, Representative Lively, we didn't count. I'm trying to recall if I heard of any that had gone away during our audit, and I don't recall that there were any. I think there was talk about it during that session, but it didn't happen in the
information that you've developed in these. So my assumption is then none of these or very few of them have any sunset or anything talks about a juncture when you decide if it needs to be continued or not, or if it's an evaluation process. That's just not part of how these, when they're appointed, part of that.
That's correct. There isn't, I'm not aware of any that have that kind of a sunset built in.
There should be a law.
It would be like a 6-year sunset, like tax credit. So when you send the 13, can you also say what House bill number it was,
sure.
so we can
mm-hmm.
kind of research what happened with that, who introduced it, what happened? And the other thing is, when you were talking about the 260, are you including task forces that are like legislative task forces or agency task forces that are in statute that are set up for some of those? I think have a sunsets.
Right. No, these would be those that are in statute that are ongoing. So that have governor appointees that legislative appointees that just they're essentially standing commissions or boards.
So like a task force that Oregon Health that we're asking in statute Oregon Health Authority to set up, you know, would have legislators and the director of health would appoint people. Something like that would not be included in this.
No, it's my understanding that we really tried to limit it to those that were just
commissions
and
boards.
Exactly.
So it seems like it'd be a huge undertaking, and albeit that they created the Sunset Commission in the past to attempt this undertaking of reviewing boards and commissions to see if they were, you know, still had a viable mission that was up to date. And you know, because I'm just sitting here thinking, how would state government undertake a review like that? And, you know, what would it take? I'm thinking, gee, 259, you know, reviews of boards and commissions would take a little bit of time and a bit of staff and, you know, to actually do a thorough job of looking at each board and commission to, you know, make a determination whether their existence could be, you know, consolidated into an agency, for example, or whether their mission is very relevant still. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have any thoughts on what the best process would be since, or any... did you uncover any reasons why the Sunset Commission apparently failed because they only took action on four boards or commissions over a long period of time?
Chair Hulvey, we didn't get into that level of detail on specifically. I assume that since they only got rid of four, that people questioned their value.
Their mission.
And I guess in terms of tackling 259, it from my standpoint as an auditor, we're looking at it from risks to the public to Oregonians. So we would be looking at those where poor performance could result in dangers to the public or economic impacts. You know, some boards might see themselves as limiting the number of professionals to keep prices high, you know, or others might be just saying, well, we're going to operate on the fees, and the more that are in there, the more staff we can have. I mean, I'm kind of looking, those are risks out there. They aren't necessarily happening. I don't know about it anywhere, but those are the things that we would be looking for. Now, in terms of putting them together and eliminating them, again, it's more like, are the interests that they represent critical still to Oregonians? And that becomes, I think, more of a, what I would say, policy or political question. And if I were to take a run at it, I would start small. That, you know, trying to do all 259 and inventory them and put them into stacks of what we definitely need, what we definitely don't need, and in between is a long, painful process. But taking a smaller piece or area, working through it, seeing how much work and pain and stamina you have to maintain to get through it all is kind of, I think, the one way to approach it. Because I know that Washington, the governor's office, basically went through and pushed a broad change in terms of how all the boards were appointed or where they were placed, and moved a lot of them into state agencies. And that's another approach. But again, I think it takes getting the legislature on board with that as well, because this is the place where those interests will be heard, and it's going to take, you know, some thoughtful decision making on this body's part as well to decide how you're going to proceed when you hear someone saying that it's critical to the future of Oregonian to have this border commission.
So is it, when you were looking at the state of Washington, I know they've done some work around this area. I think that they moved more towards advisory boards and put all their licensing functions in one agency.
I'll have to go back and look at that. I think that was one of the things that they did. I know a number of states have looked at putting those kinds of administrative functions together where, you know, you can have a common place for people to contact, or you have the same web page with a different name on the top, and they're filling the forms in for renewals, for example, for their certification. So there are those kinds of opportunities out there to automate that I think you could do by putting them together, and it wouldn't be that difficult. I mean, in terms of the judgment on whether they had the proper education and training and experience to be able to be a practicing professional is something you're not going to get in that technology, and that's right. Where you would still have the expertise. But that, you know, I'm thinking more on the certification side. The governance side, for example, because those are big agencies like Parks and Recreation or Transportation, my sense is that the risks are less there, and the efficiencies, I mean, they're kind of driven to a certain extent by the mission of the agency more and the staff there than they are kind of driven by volunteerism and lack of interest. So I guess I would feel like there are so many differences, you'd really have to kind of first sort out and figure out where you wanted to focus those, and then look at, could these be consolidated? You know, that's one of the other things that states have done, where you still maintain the independence of the oversight body, but the administrative functions are consolidated. I think those are all opportunities and options out there, and it's really what works best for Oregonians and for the state.
Mr. Chair, if there was a tax credit committee, you could do something similar, just sunset everything like you do with the tax credits and then go make this judgment before their sunset's up.
I'd have to think about that for a while. I can imagine the lineup out the door. So is there any other questions for Gary?
Assuming all of this, that one of the slides has to do with agency costs, and it talks about, in many cases, we all recognize they have a fiscal impact, but we don't define what that is, just assume how some. So the assumption I make from that, it'd be very difficult to go back, now we've identified all these commissions and committees, go back through budgets and attach some, what that actually costs from those agencies versus just continuing to operate with the unknown?
Chair Hovey, Representative Lively, I guess I would, you know, in many cases it's pretty minimal kinds of costs in the sense that, you know, a part-time staff person, you know, you'd be tracking their hours, putting an hourly rate and overhead charge to it. It could be done. I think in many cases it's more for those policy ones, it wouldn't be a lot for the cost of a board. You know, having worked in agencies where we've staffed boards, it tends to take time to get things organized, to get, you know, the materials together in advance for the meeting, to prepare the minutes afterwards, to get all the arrangements made, rooms and public announcements and all of that. So it tends to add up in terms of soft costs that kind of fit in around other people's work. But we haven't done that, and because there's 259 and we couldn't quite track them all down into which agencies, we kind of had let that go by the wayside.
In retrospect, it might have been interesting to have Ken Rocco from the Legislative Fiscal Office in this discussion as well, because I would imagine that the legislature, even though there are other funds, they authorize the spending of money that these boards and commissions expend. I'm guessing. Maybe that not all of them, but I would think they would.
The, Chair Hovey, in the budget process?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, but I don't know that they would break it out necessarily. The agency would. It would be more just within its day-to-day business. If, say, it was a board related to Oregon Health Authority, you know, they probably have a dozen boards or so mm-hmm. that they're staffing and, you know, in different programs, and they don't necessarily break each of those costs out. It's just the cost of doing business.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting. Well, everybody finished with their questions of Gary. I appreciate just refreshing our memory about our board and discussion idea, or discussion from last year, I guess, but we engaged you on this when you were sort of coming to your conclusions about boards and commissions, and just wanted to refresh the committee's memory on this topic, because I think there's potential for some efficiencies in some manner. Not exactly sure who's going to lead that charge, but there is a lot of discussions going on about, you know, how to better spend money, the taxpayers' dollars, and get as good, if not better, services at the same time. So appreciate your work and you taking the time to go through this with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Chair.
Thank you. Committee, I don't have anything left. I will say that we do have a committee appreciation get-together planned on the 11th at 4:30. You should be getting emails about that.
It's out.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, great. That was efficient. I appreciate your coming today, and I'll adjourn the House Committee for Government Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency for the 2013 session. We will not be meeting again this session unless the speaker requests us to.
Okay, then.